Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by NatureBox. Order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like cranberry macaroon granola. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. On this episode of Know-How, we're going to take you through Amazon Glacier, and we get a rolling chassis for Project Lunchbox. Welcome to Know How. It's the Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm Father Robert Balliser.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
For the next, 30 minutes? 45 minutes?
Give or take.
Something like that. We're going to take you through some of the projects that we've been working on the past few weeks so that you have the information you need to geek out on your own.
Now, Padre, this week you found something that not only tickles my fancy, but tickles my tummy.
Delicious, yes. We were showing this off a few times on the Twit TV network. I thought it finally had to make its way over to Know How. Alex, if you could go ahead and play that little video from YouTube. It's a little something-something that some tourists found while they were visiting Italy. Now, what is Italy known for in food?
Well, fast motorcycles.
Fast motorcycles.
Great food.
Great food.
And speaking of food, pizza.
Pizza, so. Yes. But what if you were more in that Krispy Kreme mode, where you wanted food that had not been touched by human hands?
Yes. You just wanted it rolled off of, like, a factory line, right?
Exactly like that. And actually, go ahead and roll it. What you see here is a pizza vending machine. Now, the idea is really simple. It's just like any other vending machine you may have. You put in your money. You choose your flavor of pizza. Now, it's not just a microwave vending machine. This thing actually makes you a pizza from the raw ingredients. You've got the dough, you've got the cheese, you've got the sauce. You get to see it mix it. You get to see it do that little pizza bread dough thingy marutzer. Then it covers it with sauce. Add your ingredients.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And now, what I really like about this is it's pizza, but it's food theater. I mean, one of the things that we like is we like to see how things are made, right?
Yeah, it's like when you get to see you build a PC and it has the clear door on the case or something. You
right.
get to see the innards and
as
they
work. It's totally pointless. It's not like it adds to the flavor of the pizza, but
no, it's just fun to watch.
It's fun to watch, right. It adds to the entertainment. Now, if you forward a little bit, Alex, you're going to find it moves from that stage over to this. So it moves the pizza over so you actually get to see it cooking in this little oven rotisserie thing. I mean, look. If they had one of these things near my home office,
can we get one for the studio? Just put it in the kitchen or something.
That would be so awesome. Now, the really interesting thing is this is actually a trend. This is not just some crazy thing going on in Italy. This is being brought over to the United States,
mm-hmm.
And we've got for example, the stadium for the Minnesota Twins. They've got robotic beer vending machines as well.
Wow.
So combine that with this, and you could eat, get fat, and get drunk, all without having to deal with a single human being. Now that's progress.
This is the future. Not having to interact with people, which I'm actually okay with, because this looks like it's going to be delicious. But this is also kind of scary, because I could see this being the beginning of Skynet.
Skynet kills us all.
It starts with pizza, yeah.
Yeah. Now, there is, I actually do want to find one of these and find out if this actually tastes any good. I'm betting that it actually tastes better than a microwave pizza. I mean, it's fresher, is going to taste better, but, I think maybe after the first couple of times, the novelty will wear off and you'll actually want a properly cooked pizza. Rather
right.
Than, yeah. I mean, who do you go to when it's not like, oh.
Does not look that great right there. Actually,
yeah, it's
that was a little disappointing. But I'd be willing to give it a shot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, if there's anyone from the company making these pizza vending machines, and you'd like to be on Know How, send one of your machines along with a representative, and we'll eat and show off your tech.
So between the pizza machine making the pizza, and then maybe drones later on at some point. No human involvement.
Exactly.
At all.
Picks up the pizza, brings it to you, drops it on you while it's hot. You get scalded, you have to go to the hospital, and then a robotic attendant takes care of your third degree burns.
Totally worth it.
Yeah.
Totally.
I'm telling you, this is the chain of life.
Yes. I'm just waiting until they come out with other. I want a calzone machine next. What's the next step from pizza? A sandwich making machine?
I think that's it. I think we're done.
That is the pinnacle of food making machines.
What else do you need?
That's true. We just survive on that.
All right. Now, speaking of what else you need, you may have noticed that I'm big on the snacks.
You?
Yeah.
No.
I've been trying to cut back, but it's been a struggle because I really like the sweet stuff.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Brick House is kind of filled with the sweet stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're already so sweet, so why would you... Sorry, I can't even go through
terrible. Just abort, just punch out. instead of listening to that, why not listen to this? Brian's going to bring out a little box filled with this Nature Box goodness. Now, the idea is really simple. Instead of snacking on sugary treats, why not get a box each and every single month of the snacks that you want? Now, take a look at this. You've got everything from, this is one of my favorites. This is actually very sweet. This is coffee, kettle popcorn. Mm. We've got sour cream and onion almonds. I know that Leo's a big fan of this. The toasted cheddar sticks.
I can never find those.
Yeah, that's
because they disappear.
They're in my desk.
They're gone.
Hey, whoa. Just don't eat the ad. Yeah, it's they've got a whole collection of foods that you can take a look at for your eating enjoyment. Go ahead and look at a couple of those, Brian.
Oh, I'm going to have a couple of them. And you don't have to feel guilty.
Right, because they've got zero trans fat. They're very low in artificial stuff. It doesn't have any high fructose corn syrup. It doesn't have any of the chemicals and the preservatives that they add in to make things like sweets last so long. And what I like is they've actually divided their choices between sweet and savory. Right? Exactly. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get to choose what you like. You get to, I didn't realize until we started getting Nature Box that snacks weren't just snacks. I mean, sometimes you're in the mood for something
sweet. You
could drill
down to if you wanted something different.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and what this encourages is it encourages you to think ahead of what you might want in snacking. And believe it or not, that actually helps. Now, this is a unsolicited endorsement, but ever since we started getting these in the studio, I haven't reduced the amount of snacking, but I actually have lost probably about 3 pounds just because I've changed snacking over to things like the sriracha. What are those? Cashews.
Well, yeah. I mean, for a lot of the time for me, it's I don't eat a lot of big meals, but I like to do a little meal every so often during the day to like maintain my blood sugar. And these, I can just grab a bag of either sweet, savory, spicy, and just go at it.
Yeah. Well, folks, you should be snacking more, and Nature Box helps you to snack in the right way. Here's how it works. You go to the website, and you click continue. Once you click continue, you get to choose between 3 subscription options, then you place your order. Once you're a member, you can select which snacks you'd like in your monthly box. You can select by dietary needs, for example, vegan, soy-free, gluten-conscious, lactose-free, nut-free, and non-GMO. And again, you can select by taste, savory, sweet, or spicy. The next time you get cranky, hippo, and hungry and are ready to eat anything, remember Nature Box. It's what we eat here at the Twit Brick House. Also, Leo's favorite are the guilt-free coconut date energy bites. I personally like the Santa Fe corn sticks when I can find them. And the pear praline snacks are actually pretty good if you just need that little bit of sweetness, a little touch.
Well, the dangerous thing is that everybody seems to be picking out their favorites, and then I never get to taste them.
Actually, this is very true. They sent us a huge shipment like a month ago, and the cupboard was filled. And I think there's like 4 bags back there now.
Hang on to this again.
No, that's for the ads. Even there. So, folks, go ahead and try Nature Box. Go ahead and...
Hey, our TD's stealing them.
This is what happens, folks. Once you get Nature Box, once people know that you've got non-GMO, all-natural snacks... Well, they're just gone in a pinch. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Nature Box. See if you might like it as much as we do. You're going to get 50% off your first box by going to naturebox.com/twit. Stay full. Stay strong. Go to naturebox.com/twit. And we thank Nature Box for their support of Know How.
Another nice thing? The packaging is really good.
You like doing
I've
that.
Thrown that thing like four
you
times.
You really like doing
I
that.
I do.
That's like your favorite thing ever, right?
So what do we got next?
Okay, so what we're going to be talking about is a little bit of Amazon Glacier. I asked our audience what they wanted to hear, and there was a lot of people both in the G Plus group and in my Twitter feed who were saying, you haven't talked about Amazon Glacier at all, and we'd like to know how to use it.
Right, because I have absolutely no idea
what that is. And unfortunately, when people think of Amazon Glacier, they think that it's just another cloud storage solution. Like you've got Dropbox, you've got OneDrive, you've got a couple of others. Your G Drive is kind of a storage solution.
Yeah.
And they think that Amazon Glacier is just like that.
Is it more enterprise?
It can be used by enterprise, but what it's really for is it's for archival storage. It's not for syncing and sharing storage.
For large amounts of data.
Yeah, let me explain what the difference is. Amazon Glacier is designed to be your storage archive in the cloud. In other words, an archive is something, a chunk of data that you want preserved, you want saved, but you don't need to access it on a regular basis. If you want to do that, if you want to like put a bunch of files up in the cloud so that you can access them from all your devices, then you use a OneDrive. If you want to share it with other people, then you use something like Dropbox.
Okay.
Glacier doesn't do that.
Okay.
Glacier is actually slow. It's actually quite slow when you compare it to Dropbox or OneDrive. It's also not web accessible. It's not like you can go to www.glacier.amazon.com and get access to your files like you can with Dropbox or OneDrive. You need a third-party client in order to access your Glacier Vault.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what would the benefits of using Glacier be then?
Well, we know that it's not for all that other stuff we talked about, right? We know that it's not for syncing, it's not for simple sharing, it's not for web access, but it is incredibly good at one thing.
And that's?
Low-cost storage. I mean, it's ridiculously low priced when you compare it to the options. Okay, let's take this. Let's say you have 100 gigabytes of data that you want to save.
Right.
All right. So let's take some of the more popular options. Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to save 100 gigabytes in Dropbox, it's going to cost you $99 a year.
Yeah, that gets expensive.
It gets kind of expensive after a while. If you wanted OneDrive, it's actually much cheaper. They've got some plans that could handle it for $24 a year, which is nice.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have some of the functionality that people like in Dropbox, but it's still a good chunk of storage.
Yeah.
If you wanted to use something like CrashPlan, which is another, I don't need to access it a lot, but I want to store a large chunk of data, that's going to cost you $60 a year.
Yeah, okay.
Now, let's say I wanted to use Amazon Glacier.
Right, for 100 gigs?
100 gigs for the entire year, $10.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what it's for. It's a place where you can cheaply put a lot of data so that if anything ever happens, you have a place to pull it back.
Well, that sounds like it would be great for backing up, because I have a bunch of old home movies and photos, things that I don't look at every day, but I definitely don't want to lose.
Right, yeah, and that's the idea. You know, it's sort of like the offline storage, except it's online.
Yeah.
If you've ever done this, sometimes like the active drives on your computer, like the SSD and maybe the spinning drive, it starts to fill up. So what do? You move it off to like an external drive.
Yep,
right?
That's what I've done.
And then you take your external drive and you tuck it in a shelf and you forget what's on there and blah, 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 blah. This is kind of like that, except it's always online. And it's not in your house. So if there's ever a disaster, you still have it.
And Amazon has like a guarantee of not losing your data?
Well, yeah, it's Amazon Web Services. This is the same cloud compute cluster that drives their EC2, that drives the storage servers that they have, that drives all their web offerings. So, yeah, it's pretty solid. It's pretty solid.
Okay.
Now, here's the hitch. If you're going to use Glacier, they don't make money on you uploading or storing your data because it is cheap. I mean, it fluctuates depending on where you live.
Yeah.
But it typically runs about 1 penny per gigabyte.
Wow.
To store per month.
Okay.
So think about it. Like for example, if I want to store the contents of both my Dropbox and my OneDrive, which is about, 30 gigs at the moment, it would cost me 30 cents.
Wow.
A
so
month.
Where are they making their money on that?
They make their money off the download.
Really?
And this is why I say that it's really for storage. It's for archival storage. It's not for active use of the data.
Right.
Because they only charge you a penny per gigabyte to store it, but after the first terabyte, they're going to charge you 12 cents per gigabyte to download. And let me get the storage tiers. Yeah, it's 12 cents per gigabyte after the first terabyte, up to 40 terabytes, or up to 10 terabytes. After 10 terabytes, it's 9 cents per gigabyte to download, up to 40 terabytes. After 40 terabytes, it's 7 cents per gigabyte, up to 100 terabytes.
Whoa.
After 100 terabytes, it's 5 cents per gigabyte to download, up to 350 terabytes. If you need more than 350 terabytes, you can negotiate a special price.
How many people use 350 terabytes?
The only
instance I could even think is this studio.
Well, or enterprises who have a ton of data up in the cloud.
That would be incredible. I can't even fathom 350 terabytes.
But that right there, it tells you what the business model is.
Okay.
It's not a sharing service. It's a place for you to put up data and have it safely until you know you don't need it anymore.
The way I imagine it is like in real life, this would be a where you store it yourself, where you put your stuff in like the box.
Right.
They have that show where they open them up and it's like, what's in here? But you do that and it's not somewhere where you're going back and forth and pulling stuff out. It's like, I don't have anywhere else to put this stuff. I'm going to hide it in this. It's not U-Haul. I can't think of the name of it, but like the rent-a-box thing. And then you leave it there and it's safe.
I had a coworker who used to call Amazon Glacier pack rat storage. It's for the person who absolutely, you just don't ever want to delete anything.
Yeah.
Here's a cheap place to put it.
That show. It would be Amazon Glacier.
Hoarders.
Where they're like,
Amazon
let's
hoarders.
See what data is in here. Nobody has accessed this in about 6 years. Let's see what they got.
You saved 14 terabytes worth of web pages. we're not really sure why. Let's go ahead and delete that.
Some sweet bookmarks in there.
Now let me add this. Security-wise, it's server-side encrypted. So once it gets up to the server, it is encrypted. But Amazon keeps the keys. So if you're a little paranoid about that, it's a very easy process to encrypt it on your side.
I was going to say, what if you encrypted it and then sent it to Amazon?
Right. Essentially, all it is it's a big, dumb chunk of space on the internet. So if you encrypt it before it gets to the server, then you hold the keys, and
it doesn't matter, trust
no one. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So let's go ahead and jump straight into how this actually works. I made a little video here that's going to show how simple it is, probably less than 10 minutes, to go from wanting to use Glacier to being up and running.
The first thing that we need to do is to sign up for Amazon Web Services. You can find it at aws.amazon.com. If you already have an Amazon account, you can tie AWS to your existing login, but I prefer to have a unique login for AWS because I don't trust Cranky Hippo with my Amazon account. If you decide to start a new account, you'll have to give Amazon all your contact information and a billing option as well as a phone number so that it can verify your identification. Signing up for AWS automatically gives you 750 hours per month of free Amazon EC2, 5 gigabytes per month of Amazon S3 storage, and 750 hours per month of database access for a year. But what we want is Amazon Glacier. Once you're in the Amazon Web Services menu, click the Glacier icon and you'll be brought to a page that will prompt you to create a vault. That vault is like an online hard drive. You can copy files and folders to that vault, and it will be isolated from all other vaults that you may create. Once your vault is created, you need a third-party application that can access Glacier. The program I use is called FastGlacier. It's a fast, free, and simple client for Windows. Go to fastglacier.com and download the free version of that software. Once installed, you'll first need to give your account a name. This is a name local to your computer, so it can be anything that helps you remember what kind of data you'll be storing in your account. Next, you need to get the access key ID and secret access key. This can be found in your Amazon Web Services account in the drop-down menu under your account name. Select Security Credentials, and it will bring you to a page labeled Your Security Credentials. Select Access Keys, then click Create New Access Key. And AWS will generate a unique access key ID and secret access key for your AWS account. Go ahead and download the key file. This will be the only time you'll be able to retrieve your secret access key. The access key ID and secret access key will be a long set of letters and numbers that need to be inputted into FastGlacier. Once you've properly inputted the access key and ID, FastGlacier is connected to your Amazon Glacier vault. The top window of Fast Glacier acts like a folder. Anything you drag and drop into that folder will be automatically queued for upload to your vault. Additionally, anything you select from that folder can be downloaded from AWS to your computer.
It's really that simple. There's a lot of people who kind of get freaked out because it's not just a client you install on your computer like Dropbox or OneDrive, but it's really, really, really simple. Now, there are some people in the chat room who are saying, oh, like we've got Web5497 saying, careful, running EC2 services can lead to big bills. Yes, it can, but he's specifically talking about EC2, the Elastic Cloud Compute. So if you're running a process that's using up processor time, you get 750 hours free per month. But you can burn through that really quickly if you're like...
If you're moving stuff around a lot?
Well, if you're using their CPUs, their processors, to, say, run your back end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, what we're doing is much safer. It's Glacier. Yeah. And Glacier, you really only get charged a tiny bit for storage. You get charged a tiny bit, although more, for downloading. And the, remember, the first terabyte of that is free.
Right.
And then you also get charged a tiny, tiny bit, like 5 cents... for every 1,000 transactions that take place.
Yeah.
It's really going to be low cost unless you are hitting this thing all the time.
Right.
You're going to be paying pennies per month.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like the best alternative to, instead of using Dropbox or getting yourself an IO safe, maybe, like if you didn't care about accessing the data all the time, then that sounds perfect.
Now, it's funny that you should mention that, because we've had a lot of people who have talked about, well, what's the best way to run crash plan on my NAS, or how do I back up everything from my cloud storage software services to a single device? Well, there have been people who have wanted to install, say, a crash plan or hack a NAS to install crash plan on it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to do something a little bit different. In the next episode, I'm going to show you how I bought one of this. I got this on eBay for
netbook?
Yeah, like $55. This is a netbook, a decent one from Acer, running Windows 7. And what it's going to do, it's a super, super low power. This thing, when the monitor's off, sucks about 5 to 6 watts of power.
What is it, Atom processor?
It's an Atom processor. But what it will allow us to do is I can run all my cloud service clients so that my Dropbox and my OneDrive are automatically syncing to this. Mm-hmm. It will automatically mount my NAS boxes, and then it will sync all of that up into Amazon Glacier.
Oh, that's cool.
So this becomes my super low power but high reliability service to get everything backed up.
Ah, okay. That's going to be really cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Now, one other thing I want to point out. Alex, if you could go and go to my second laptop, to the one that has Fast Glacier running on it right now. This is actually, so when we talk about vaults, we created this one vault. You can create vaults in multiple areas and do copies between your vaults. So if you really wanted high availability, you could copy yourself into different geographical locations to make sure that you're always good. Now, that's a bit more advanced. Right now, all you need to know is if you drop it into that little folder here, it's going to copy it over to the Glacier. Mm-hmm. And once you've got your stuff copied up, if you see it in here, you can always download it back to your computer.
Do they have a limit on bandwidth at all, or is it
It's whatever you can pay for.
Okay.
If you wanted to, you could upload and download 100 terabytes, a petabyte a month, but you'd have to have a pretty fast connection.
I think I know where I'll be bringing all my external hard drives here to the studio. I have some things I need to back up. So
next time we're going to take this to the next level. This shows you how to use it. It's an introduction to Glacier. Next time, we're going to show you how to make it useful.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I had actually never heard of it before. And the ones that that I know of are Google Drive, Dropbox, and I use those for different reasons. Like, I do back up my photos from my mobile devices, but those are more... I haven't paid for any of that. Yeah. I got all that stuff free, so...
Wouldn't it be nice to have a peace of mind that all of those things are backed up in one place
that
will never go down?
Yes, absolutely.
I like that. Or 99.9999%.
There's a chance of anything happening, but yeah.
Nuclear war, you're probably going to lose access.
Once the pizza vending machines take over the world.
Now, let's get away from Glacier and talk a little bit about Project Lunchbox. Mm. That's right. This is our remote control vehicle. We've been playing with this quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. We built this just so that we could show you all the things that go into building a scale model, and it's fantastic.
There's absolutely no ulterior motive for to build this.
It's not that we wanted Twit to just to pay for some toys.
And play with it. Mm. Yeah.
No. But now that we've assembled the transmission, now that we know how the servos and the motors work, I think it's time to do an assembly of the chassis.
When we last saw Project Lunchbox, we had completed the assembly of the transmission and drive package. Now we need to work on the steering assembly and chassis integration. As with the assembly of the transmission, everything needed for chassis integration is tagged, bagged, and labeled. However, it helps to have a visual training guide because the instructions aren't always clear as to how and why things work. Once again, clip your pieces when needed, making sure to cut as close to the surface of the part without cutting into the body of the part. Don't mind the stray bits of plastic as they can be cleared away with an X-Acto knife or a bit of sandpaper after final assembly. The first thing that we need to do is to assemble the steering mechanism. The wheels on a model vehicle are turned by the mechanical force generated by the servos. The top of the servo is a slotted shaft that allows you to fit a servo arm, which will in turn drive steel rods that turn the wheels. You pick the part that works best with your brand of servo, then install it so that the tab is facing up on the servo assembly. The best way to properly position the servo adapter is to plug the servo into the receiver and turn on the power with the transmitter in neutral. The servo will return to its neutral position, and you can seat the adapter. The servo saver is slotted on the top of the servo adapter, and the control arm is slotted into the servo saver. With the assembly complete, you need to install two ball connector nuts on either side of the control arm. The further the ball connectors are from the center of the shaft, the more motion you'll get, but the less torque. In a vehicle like the Lunchbox, extraordinary lateral forces can be exerted on the steering wheels, force that can damage the servo mechanism. We counteract that force with a servo saver, a small C-shaped part that can deform under pressure. This keeps all the force from impacting the servo shaft, saving the internal servo mechanism. We now need to install the steering servo assembly into the Lunchbox's bathtub chassis. Two mounting posts attach to the servo, then the mounting posts are locked into the chassis with the servo upside down and the ball connectors pointing to the rear of the chassis. With the steering servo locked down, it's time to install the front arms. These arms will connect the wheels to the body and suspension and hold the uprights on which the wheels are mounted. Take an upright and install a ball connector in the last mounting hole. Repeat the process with the other upright, making sure to create a mirror image version of the first upright, with the ball connectors on the opposite side of each upright. Install the uprights into the appropriate arms. You can determine which arm each upright should be seated in by turning the arm so that the large triangle is closest to the rear of the vehicle and the screw hole on the end of the arm is facing upwards. With the arm in this position, you need to install the upright so that it will have its ball connector closest to the rear of the vehicle. Once you've confirmed which upright belongs to which arm, lube the screw pin and lock the upright into the arm. Now attach a spring mount to the screw hole at the end of the arm, making sure that the notch in the mount matches the plastic tab on the arm. With the mount attached, slot a lubed-up brass tube through a damper end cap and bolt it into the mount. This is where the damper assembly will attach, to absorb the force of vertical impact on the wheels. Once fully assembled, the front arm assemblies should look like mirror images of one another. If they don't, you need to disassemble and reassemble the offending arm. Now let's get integrating. Screw the front arm receiver onto the chassis. This is the part of the structure that will hold the steering assembly in place. Next, install the hold-down bar on the battery holder. A small hex mount locks into the bar to put tension on the battery and hold it in place during operation. A piece of foam tape will help to keep the battery from sliding under the chassis. The transmission will be held in place by two spring-loaded axle holders that enclose a steel bar that slots through the transmission casing. Lube the axle holders and use a small screw to secure and hold back the springs. Install one of the axle holders into the chassis, then slip that side of the transmission into place. Slowly slide the second axle holder into its slot along with the other side of the transmission, then secure the axle holders into the chassis. Remove the screws holding back the springs, and now the axle is free to rotate and slide within the axle holders. Install the battery holder assembly over the axle holders and secure it in the front and the rear. Next, we need to install the steering rods, two steel rods, one bigger than the other, that will connect the steering servo to the front arm receivers. A small plastic adjuster screws onto each end of each rod. Screwing the adjusters tighter shortens the overall length of the rod, while loosening them makes them longer. Using a pair of pliers, snap the end of each rod onto the ball connectors on the steering servo. Make sure to use the longer arm on the side that is furthest from the servo shaft. Place both front arm assemblies into their slots and use the T-cover to secure them into place. With both the transmission and front arms installed, it's time to install the dampers on the transmission. Lube each shaft, then slot them through the shock mounts on the chassis. The part where the top of the shaft touches the chassis tends to be a weak point in the lunchbox, so I like to use one of the unused bushings as a spacer to spread the force of impact over a larger surface. With the shaft in place, slide the damper assembly over the shaft, then a small piece of tubing towards the threads. This will keep the damper from impacting the lower end cap during hard compression. Slide the spring over the damper assembly, then secure it with the end cap. With both dampers assembled, move the transmission into place, then snap the end caps over the connector balls on the transmission housing. The transmission should now be attached to the chassis at four points. Repeat the process for the front dampers. With the front arms at the right height, it's time to test the steering alignment. Connect the receiver and power source, then turn on the transmitter. With the stick at neutral, you want the uprights to be perpendicular to the chassis and to each other. Loosen and tighten the arms until the uprights line up properly. Then snap the rods to the ball connectors on the uprights with a pair of pliers. Let's put on the wheels. As we demonstrated in the last edition of Project Lunchbox, the rear wheels lock to the drive hubs that are then locked to the shaft. However, the front wheels spin freely on the uprights. Each wheel will use two of the four remaining ball bearings from your ball bearing kit, or the plastic bushings if you didn't replace them with ball bearings. However, if you doubted the advantages of using ball bearings, keep your eyes on the wheels. The one on the left is using plastic bushings, the wheel on the right, ball bearings. Lock all the wheels with wheel nuts, and voila! You have now completed the mechanical assembly of Project Lunchbox.
We had a user in the chat room who said, "Whoa, but will it pop a wheelie?" Yeah.
There's a bar specifically for that.
That's why there's this. This thing has so much torque that if you just hit the throttle, it will rear back up on its wheels. That's why that bar is there.
No, I just putting it all together. I love it when a plan comes together. But you could. But specifically, the ball bearings make such a big difference.
It makes a huge difference. A lot of people are, because especially since you install the transmission first, you don't really see it.
Yeah.
Because there's so much friction from the gears that you don't get a lot of spin. But yeah, off the front wheels, a wheel with ball bearings will spin for like 10 times longer than a wheel with plastic bushings. So anything you can do to reduce the amount of friction, that's going to be good in the long run.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a pretty cool project. And the similarities to a real vehicle are pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we tell people to build models. We don't just want to build toys.
Right.
When you put something like this together, and we've said this several times, you actually learn some of the concepts that go into making full-size vehicles. Like the push arms, that's pretty much how steering assemblies work on big cars. The whole idea of the shock absorption, this is a really simple shock absorber. It's just a damper, it's just a spring. But we're going to be able to upgrade those to oil-filled shocks and dampers.
We're going to do oil-filled shocks. And then wasn't there one that you were talking about where, because you can see the wheel kind of goes up and at an angle?
Yeah. When we start assembling the more advanced models, you're going to see double A arms so that it keeps the wheels at the same camber as they travel up and down.
This is a
beginner's kit. The reason why we chose this, and there have been some people in the G Plus group who said, well, I would have started with a more advanced kit, is this is cheap. This is nearly indestructible.
We've almost already broke this.
Yeah.
So it's nearly indestructible.
We would have destroyed a more advanced car by now. Yeah. And the chassis is so big that it's going to allow us to do some fun stuff. For example, we've got that whole autonomous Raspberry Pi controlled lunchbox I'm trying to build.
I didn't know about that.
Oh, damn.
Oh, that was a surprise.
Damn.
No, I mean, this is perfect for chasing small children,
your dog, animals.
My dog hates that. Oh, he's so not happy about this thing. But it's a good size, too, for driving around in your backyard or your... Or your street, because it can hop curbs and stuff like that. You don't have to worry about it too much. So, yeah. No, this is great. I've been having a lot of fun.
Now, the next time we see Project Lunchbox is going to be when we do the final assembly. So far, you've seen all the mechanical pieces, the transmission, the steering assembly, the chassis, the rolling chassis. Next, we have to show you how this comes together, the shell, the speed controller, the receiver. And finally, I believe your brother is going to give us a little paint job. And I think you want the A-team theme for this one.
Maybe the KH team.
I kind of want mine to be sort of like the mystery machine from Scooby-Doo. But we'll see. We'll get to that.
Hide your snacks inside of it.
Yeah. You'll see that next episode probably in about 2 or 3 weeks. Next time, in the next episode, we're going to be, again, covering more about Amazon Glacier. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a little something about upgrading your PC. Who knows? Now, Brian, this was a lot of material for people to cover.
It was.
Yeah, especially Amazon Glacier.
Yes, because there's a lot of steps to follow, but we make it easy for people to follow along at a website called twit.tv/KH. And so you can go there, find our show notes. That's where all our past episodes are. Do you have any show notes? Have you prepared those yet?
I do. I have show notes for this, so they will be ready to go when this episode actually gets released.
Perfect.
By the way, live viewers, you are so good that you watched an episode that will not be released for 2 weeks.
This is for you guys.
Yeah, especially you can get started on your Amazon Glacier stuff right now so that when the other viewers come over
and say,
how are you so far ahead? You just say,
what else? I've heard of Glacier. I caught a live episode of Know How, which airs typically on Thursdays at 11.
That's right. So normally we're on Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. Pacific time. You can find us at live.twit.tv. And as long as you're there, why not join us in the chat room? We always talk to our chat room at irc.twit.tv. Also, we're liking social media stuff, right?
We do that? More so than I would like to admit,
Well, where's the Google Plus group?
We have the Google Plus community, which is awesome because this is where people post their ideas. They post some of the projects that they've been coming up with from watching the show. And people just help each other solve problems, too. I used to go into the group hoping that I could help someone answer a question, and now I go in and I look at all the other users answering questions that people have had.
Christopher Roman, we were emailing back and forth. He made a passive tap, and he was trying to get it to work for Gigabit. And this is what I love. He had a question of, why doesn't this work? And you had people who gave him the physical answers for, why you can't tap a Gigabit network passively. And that's what I love about
the beauty of the community.
Group.
Yeah.
It's not us. Most of the time, it's not Brian or myself. It's the other know-it-alls who come up with your answers.
You're pulling in all the knowledge into one place.
Yeah. Where would that knowledge go?
into
your knowledge hole?
We're filling those knowledge holes.
When did we start the knowledge hole thing?
It was a few shows back, and we just haven't stopped.
Well, until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know,
go do it.